Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. Canucks and Kings going down tonight at the rink. Canucks returning home after a five-game road trip in which they went 1-2-2, have a three-game homestand with a couple of tough matchups on tap. Tonight against the Kings, who are 24-12-5, the Edmonton Oilers, who have been as hot as any team in the league here on Saturday, and then one you can chalk up as a win against the Buffalo Sabres. But we know with the way the Canucks have played, there are no easy games on the schedule. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Cole Bagley, digital insider for the Utah Hockey Club on KSL Sports. Thanks for this, Cole. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well. We're trying to figure out what the Canucks are this year. You know, we came in as thinking that they were going to be a playoff team with some aspirations of maybe making some noise in the Western Conference playoffs. They haven't really been that at all, and they find themselves looking inward to a bunch of different trade discussions and have recently been connected with the Utah Hockey Club, who I find super interesting going into the next little trade season. What do you make of Utah so far this year and what their plans might be ahead of the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think you know, it probably hasn't quite been the nature that the front office was anticipating, but you know, the Utah Hockey Club has played up to the expectations and what Bill Armstrong anticipated. You know, right at 500, right? 18 wins, 18 losses, a handful of overtime losses and whatnot. And like I said, you know, the nature of it has definitely been strange in certain aspects. You know, they've had stretches where they've won 5-6 games in a row. For a while there, they could not be beaten on the road, but then at home, you know, they've got the fewest wins in the National Hockey League on home ice at just, I believe, 6. And so, yeah, it's an interesting season. There's, you know, a lot going into it that I'm sure is, you know, impacting the results. But in terms of, you know, the trade deadline and some conversations that I know Bill Armstrong has been a part of recently, you know, he's made it known that they have the assets to take a swing. And if a trade makes sense and they feel like it's going to make their hockey team better, they're not going to shy away from it, which I think is a different mindset than they had in Arizona, especially over the last few years. And as they've kind of come along this season, you know, this is a team that's developing still. They're in the fourth year of a rebuild, but it's time to take that next step, right? It's time to start making the playoffs. You know, they bring in guys like John Marino and Mikhail Sergachev and some veterans like Kevin Stenlund and Ian Cole to help them. But as they've kind of shown, you know, they're lacking some firepower. That, you know, they're probably a player or two away from really starting to make a push consistently for the playoffs. And so, you know, we'll see what happens at the trade deadline. I wouldn't be shocked either way, but I think the mindset for the Utah Hockey Club is starting to shift in terms of, you know, rather, you know, being buyers than sellers.
Well, and considering how successful this first year is, it seems to, I mean, obviously you want to make the playoffs every year, but is there an extra maybe emphasis on trying to make this first year in Utah as successful as possible?
I think from the fan base, you know, there is. And I think, you know, the front office definitely wants to provide that for Utah, you know, to build on it, right? I mean, it's the inaugural season. It's the first time that a team has called Utah home. And so what better to you know, really hook fans in on the game of hockey than to bring the Stanley Cup playoffs to Salt Lake City. But at the same time, you know, I know that Bill Armstrong has a, you know, more of a broader view, a long-term view of this development process. You know, he's not going to jump into anything with a lot of risk, I don't think. You know, he's like I said, they are playing to his expectations and to what he was anticipating. And why forfeit, you know, one of your greatest assets of time? You know, it's not like Utah is pressed You know, it's not like Utah's in a situation where they were anticipating, oh, man, this is a playoff team. No. You know, if do they have the potential? Sure. But if they miss, it's not the end of the world. And you know, there will, like you said, there will always be another opportunity.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw at the draft sort of a different mindset from the Utah Hockey Club in the offseason, making the trade for John Marino, 27-year-old defenseman. Mikhail Sergachev came in from the Tampa Bay Lightning, 26-year-old defenseman. Players that had big-term contracts already tied into them. And I feel like that's still a similar range of what Bill Armstrong is probably looking for, and that is – you know, kind of players in their mid-20s that fit in with the timeline of the young group they've already assembled.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, they're one of the youngest teams in the National Hockey League, and, you know, while I think they don't want to always be that, you know, I think they are trying to gather assets in that same, you know, kind of time range. I mean, you've got, you know, superstar potential in Dylan Gunther and Logan Cooley. You've already, you know, you've got a four-time All-Star in Clayton Keller. You've got a two-time Stanley Cup champion in Mikhail Sergachev, who's only 26, but he plays, you know, like he's been in the league for, you know, a lot longer than that. So, yeah, they're definitely, you know, every team needs veterans. That's why, you know, they've got guys like Ian Cole and you know, Olli Maatta and stuff like that. But those aren't, you know, those guys aren't on contracts that are super long, right? They're not in for a long haul. But, you know, a guy like Mikhail Sergachev, you know, he's going to be here for some time. And so, yeah, it's searching for the right pieces, you know, searching for their kind of that right age timeline and, you know, really looking to build a championship roster that can not only eventually go to the distance, but I think, you know, sustain that for years to come.
And obviously, you know, in this market, there's been a lot of trade rumors around some pretty big players, especially JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. And even, you know, we heard JT's name be linked to Utah recently as well from some insiders. Is that something you could see Utah exploring, trying to get after one of the Canucks' top centers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have, you know, this is not me saying that there's any direct links, you know, upcoming or anything like that, but just my own personal opinion. I think either of those guys would you know, be a great addition. You know, in my perspective, Utah is lacking firepower. You know, over the last 10 games, of which they've lost 8, they've been outscored 34-20. And, you know, they've been outscored in the second period during that same stretch, 12-6. And they're not winning hockey games right now. And when you look at, you know, you take a step back and you look at, you know, who's leading this team in points, it's about 4 or 5 guys that have got 60 or 70% of the production. And so, you know, they need, you know, a player like Pettersson or Miller, you know, who are offensive, you know, minded guys who know how to put the puck in the net, not just scoring wise, but, you know, helping their teammates out. I think it would be, you know, a great fit, especially a guy like Pettersson, right? Like, we're talking about, you know, fitting that timeline, fitting, you know, finding guys of that kind of same age group. For me, that would be the home run, you know, in terms of if, you know, Utah was going to go after somebody on that Canucks roster.
I guess it could be one of those situations where if they are on the outside of the playoffs, they could become a seller on some of their rentals, like Ian Cole types on the roster, but still looking to find that younger piece to add to the group should that opportunity become available. Is it sort of a hybrid type of scenario that could develop here as well?
Yeah, the other day Bill said that how they're going to react at the trade deadline is going to, you know, kind of be based on how the next stretch goes and how their players respond here in the next few weeks. And yeah, it's interesting because this team could either be buyers or sellers, and it goes back to time is on their side. You know, if they get to the trade deadline and they feel that, you know, they can make a significant push by adding the right player, not just adding the right player, but, you know, not taking on something super risky that's going to backfire after just a season, that'll help them out. You know, I could see them taking a swing, or, you know, on the reverse of that, go in the next few weeks, things don't pan out, and, you know, maybe some other teams that are trying to make a push come knocking, and, you know, Utah can continue to put themselves in an even better situation with even more assets so that moving forward, you know, again, they can bolster the roster. They can figure out their more of their identity, and they can add players that are going to help them in the long term. Because, you know, that's what Bill's trying to do here. He's gathering assets at an incredible pace, and, you know, he wants to more or less build a dynasty in Utah, which, you know, it would be a lot of fun for the fans to kind of see that.
Hey, Cole, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much for this today.
Hey, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
There is Cole Bagley, digital insider for the Utah Hockey Club on KSL Sports, and an interesting team. They've been connected now with the Vancouver Canucks as a team that could be interested if the Canucks are serious about trading any of their top two centermen.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we talked about it during Overrated, Underrated about Utah as a trade fit, and ultimately you're not getting the value you want, but they're a club that can give you draft picks if you want. They have prospects. Mm-hmm. They have young defensemen. They have cheap defensemen. They have a bit more expensive defensemen. They have players who are veterans who could come in and step in and play on your second line if need be. So they have all the part pieces to make it enticing. The question is Bill Armstrong willing to pay, you know, close to full freight or pay a relative premium, or is he trying to pull another fast one on the Canucks here where he made the trade to move Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Connor Garland here for all the expiring contracts and the draft capital they got? Is he looking to make that type of deal, or is he looking to make something that's a bit more beneficial for both parties, let's say?
It's going to be interesting because one of the things over the next month, you know, we talked about it with the Canucks. What are they going to do ahead of the deadline? How much is that? Still a fluid situation given their where they're situated in the standings. I think a lot of teams are still very much in that, what are we, what do we want to do, what can we do this year? But there's definitely a few more teams that are reluctant to be big-time sellers and are probably in a similar situation to the Canucks where maybe you don't want to spend too much on a rental, but if the right player becomes available that can help you this year and the next couple of years, that would be the ideal situation for a team like the Canucks, but also a team like Utah and some others that have been rebuilding for a while. Let's bring in our next guest, Brandon Astle, Abbotsford play-by-play. Abbotsford Canucks on a bit of a win streak here lately. Thanks for this, Brandon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Yeah, thanks for making time for us. It's been a good little stretch run here for Abbotsford. And, you know, we're seeing the Canucks benefit from Jonathan Lekkermäki going down to Abbotsford and having a little bit more success, playing more to the staples of the organization. What were you seeing in Lekkermäki before his latest call-up to the big club where he's starting to earn a little bit more trust from his head coaches?
Yeah, I was seeing a guy that was really taking care of his own end and paying attention to those types of details because, as he knows, Rick Tocchet wants his forwards to be very responsible in their own end. And that was one thing he wanted to come into North America and work on. We know the shots there, the offense, the vision, the playmaking, that stuff is elite. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to defend. And he's really taken that kind of task and has been working on it every day when in Abbotsford. And imagine that's still going on up in Vancouver with their coaching staff. And I've mentioned it a few times that his defense has led to some offense. I remember in Henderson, he stripped a guy at center, went on a breakaway and scored a beauty. And he's also been a guy that he's obviously not big, but he's someone that is able to find like the quiet spaces on the ice. And he doesn't need a whole lot of time to let that shot go, as we know. So I like that kind of part of his game. He's able to find that space areas where maybe he's not being defended just yet, gets behind a defender, gets that one timer going. So main focus is the defensive play, which we've seen is pretty good. Obviously you'll be able to improve that. Especially when he's in the NHL and getting a shot in the top six again today. I think that's a perfect spot for him.
One, the other forward with the Canucks, who was recalled again as the Canucks juggle their cap situation as much as possible, is Max Sasson. And last time we chatted with you, we talked about Sasson and how underrated he is and how well he's played. And don't be surprised to see him come up with the big club. What are your thoughts on how he's played and the success he has had with the Canucks?
Yeah, I honestly think this is just the tip of the iceberg. When he really gets comfortable, which hopefully is soon, I think you're going to see him take his game to another level. And he's played well already. And this is a guy that has mainly played center in Abbotsford, right? Over the last 2 years, I can't recall a single shift where he played wing. Maybe it's happened a few times when Jeremy Colleton was coaching him. He hasn't played center this year under Manny Malhotra. And then he goes up to the NHL, and then he gets put on the wing in his first couple games. So I was kind of like, oh, how is he going to handle that? But he's taken it in stride and has been really solid. Like I mentioned about Lekker-Mäki, he takes care of the defensive zone first. Obviously, he's known for his speed and how he thinks the game. He's a great playmaker. Max just does a lot of things well, which translates at the National Hockey League level. And he's someone that can be streaky. Once he sees it go in again or gets an assist, they kind of start to come in bunches. And I know he's looking to work on consistency, and that's a way to stick in the National Hockey League. And just the way he goes about his business, he works so hard off the ice. He's always learning in the video room, always trying to get better. I think obviously his speed is his biggest asset. And like I said, as soon as he starts feeling comfortable in his new skin in the National Hockey League, I think that he's going to be a full-time player there someday.
So what's impressed you lately with Abbotsford? Four straight wins, as I mentioned. You look at some of the stats and no one player really jumps off the page with how they are scoring down at the AHL level. What's the mindset of this group and who is standing out as it turns right now?
Yeah, Dan, it's scoring by committee. They had six different goal scorers in their win on Tuesday and spread it out again last night against Ontario in another win. And it's funny how things change so quickly. Six days ago, they came into their six-game homestand that they're on right now on a six-game losing skid. Things weren't going well. Now, I will say it's not like they were getting crushed when they were on that skid. They did have some tough losses where they led in the third but ended up losing in regulation. Also had an overtime loss in Calgary on the road trip. And we're just kind of like having issues closing out games. But now they have got a bunch of practices under their belt, which they play so much better when they can start putting together practices back-to-back on consecutive days. They've now ripped off four straight wins. They just beat a very good Ontario team, as I mentioned, on Tuesday and yesterday, which not many teams have done all year. They're a pretty veteran-heavy squad. And I will say this, in this league, a lot of your success sometimes rides on your NHL affiliate's health. And Vancouver has just one forward out right now in Dakota Joshua. So The team in Abbotsford is pretty deep at the moment. They still got Sasson, Lekker-Mäki, and Breezeball up there, which is great. And some guys that are really starting to stuff the stat sheet. Atu Ratu's on fire. He's got 8 points over his last three games. And he's someone that showed last year he can get hot in a hurry. He had 9 points over a three-game stretch last year in March. And he's just like taking care of his own end like he usually does. Being relied upon face-offs. I mean, when it starts comes to Atu, we know he can put up the points. I kind of want to look at like his whole body of work and how that's going in Abbotsford. Can he keep doing that consistency? Like I mentioned, still winning face-offs, puck battles, physicality, along the boards, penalty killing. And I mean, he's really good at the circle. In each of the last two games against Ontario, he won a face-off that directly led to a quick goal. And these types of things in his game are going to get him back to the NHL and hopefully not come back to Abbotsford. And I think now he's starting to realize what type of player he needs to be at the NHL level. And right now, at least, it's not the top six, right? I think we can agree on that. If he does go back up, he'll probably be like the third or fourth line center, maybe some wing as well, but he does bring that versatility. And can he be a top six guy in the future? Sure, I wouldn't put it past him. He's got a lot of skill. He's got the right mindset. But right now, he's just got to keep focusing on those little things that help a team win. And Rick Tocchet has seen what he brings to the table. He just got to do it on a more consistent basis. Our Steve Baines as well, he's been looking good. Ratu and Baines are playing together right now, and you just know what you're getting from Arsh each and every night. He's counted on for the offense for sure, but he's still someone that thrives in being thrown in any situation. He's really solid along the boards. Like, he isn't the biggest guy. He's just got such a good ability to kind of find a quiet area. Like I was talking about Lekker-Mäki, he makes the right play under pressure, both ends of the rink. And like, when you're a winger in your own zone along the boards and you see your defenseman kind of blindly ringing around, you kind of hold your breath. You're like, oh boy. And as soon as it touches your stick, you're likely getting hit. And I mean, it's a skill. Either making a quick pass when it comes to you, finding an open teammate, chipping it off the boards or the glass. And Baines is really starting to kind of find that knack. He's worked that into his game. and he just kind of seems calm when that type of play makes it over to his way. So those two are definitely leading the charge right now, which is great to see.
Well, and as far as the defensemen are concerned, Elias Pettersson is an AHL All-Star in his first year, which is a really good sign of his progress so far. How has he been doing, and how are the blue liners faring on that team right now?
Yeah, so for Pettersson, he just continues to play well. I keep wondering when he's going to hit the rookie wall at all, which happens. It's very common to young players in this league, especially defensemen at his age. It's really hard to step into the AHL and play well for a young blue liner. Like, usually in year one, it's like a lot of learning and sitting out, watching, unfortunately getting healthy scratch. That's pretty common for a rookie blue liner. And like right now, Sat, there are 9 healthy defensemen at the Abbotsford Canucks. And in my opinion, all 9 are everyday AHLers. So there's a lot of competition for playing time right now, which is raising the intensity in practices is what they keep telling me, which makes sense. But only 6 are going to dress every night. Kudryavtsev sat last night. McWhorter's out on Tuesday. And it just becomes a numbers game. And I don't envy Manny Malhotra's position right now, because I honestly don't know who I would take out on the back end when everyone's healthy. But Pettersson's been that one staple he's kept in the lineup. And like you mentioned, he's an AHL All-Star, the youngest player in franchise history to go to the All-Star game at just 20 years old, continues to play physical, defends hard, makes simple plays out of the zone, blocks shots, and he's shown some offensive flair as well, which is gravy. And I was kind of thinking the other day, I don't think the Canucks have had a defensive prospect like this in a while. And what I mean by that, just hold the phones. I know Quinn Hughes, best defenseman they've ever drafted. Tom Wallander looks like he's going to be a stud. But just the way Elias plays, like, he's nasty out there. And I mean that as a big compliment. And I know fans love Zadorov when he was here. Just wait until they see Pettersson play defense. He kind of does remind me of Zadorov a bit. They're both big bodies that skate well. He may not give as good of a sound bite as Zadorov before or after games, but his play does a lot of the talking. And I mean, like I said, all you need to know, he's going to the All-Star game. He's not even 21.
We're real tight for time, but curious, how has Sammy Blais looked?
Sammy Blais probably one of been the best forwards over the last week. He's on a 5-game point streak, and obviously he missed a couple months of injury, which set him back a bunch, and then kind of took a few games to work himself back into a lather. But he is leading the charge. You can tell he's got the respect of his teammates, and he's the puck's going in. He's being a difference on the power play right now. So he's such a good guy, a veteran guy like that who's won a cup, to be in that locker room around the young guys. And looking forward to seeing how he does here in the second half.
Hey, Brandon, really appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
No worries, boys. Next time, let's talk about Ty Mueller.
Oh,
very good.
I would love to hear more about Ty Mueller. He stole the show in training camp, so I'd love to hear more about him.
Let's do it.
Thanks, Brandon. Really appreciate it. Wish we had more time.
All right. Thanks, boys. See ya.
There is Brandon Astle, Abbotsford play-by-play. Abbotsford on a 4-game win streak, just beating the Ontario Reign in a couple of games. The AHL affiliate of the LA Kings, who are in town tonight. Coming up, Sportsnet Murph joins us in the booth here at Rogers Arena. That's next on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Central here in the Mobile Kintech studio. Canucks and LA Kings from Rogers Arena, 2 hours away from puck drop, as the 19-14-10 Canucks try to get back into the win column after a tough loss to the Winnipeg Jets on Tuesday. Now joining us in studio, Sportsnet Murph, Canucks ringside reporter Dan Murphy. What's happening?
What's going on, fellas? Good to be home.
Yeah, it's good. We haven't seen you in a while.
I know.
It's been a while. Long road trip. Not a very successful road trip, which we'll get to in a moment. But we know you're a big fan of overrated, underrated. I've been meaning to ask you this for a long time. Overrated, underrated, Winnipeg Mall Sushi, since you were just there.
Well, it got me one time. And I knew getting it was a mistake. And then usually the rule is if it travels as far as you do to get there,
yeah,
it's probably not going to be great.
Yeah.
So if I was in Winnipeg, I probably should have had like walleye strips or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For some reason. And you know what? It wasn't great, but I found a place that's
okay.
Not too bad.
All right.
So, I mean, and if you go for like tempura roll or something like that,
yeah,
it's going to
be
fine, or avocado. It's just if you're getting into the tuna and stuff like that. You're like,
yeah. So, I mean, a place that was fine by Vancouver standards, what does that mean? Like, would that be like a 7 out of 10 Sushi Vancouver, or like,
yeah,
legitimate?
Maybe 7 out of 10. But I don't know what you guys are like with sushi. Like, once you find a place, you stay with it.
Yeah.
But then if you have one bad experience, you're gone from it.
That's the thing with fish, right? Anytime you have a bad experience, it's just kind of like it kind of turns you off.
Yeah.
There's a couple of places I had to give up on, you know, because it's just like you go there first couple of times, it was great. Then you have one bad experience. You're like, oh, cannot do it anymore.
Let's try something new.
But it's been good. And, you know, the other day I had a thought that Nick Taylor is one of the most clutch Canadian athletes right now, because he only seems to come up with massive wins. Like last week at the Sony Open, hits a long chip to force a playoff on 18.
Yeah.
You think about his Canadian Open win, has to hit a 72-footer to win the thing. I mean, he only wins in fashionable style. It's never an easy finish for Nick Taylor.
Yeah, and I thought he'd kind of, like, when he missed the short putts on 15 and 16, I thought that was it.
Yeah.
But the other two guys, Jagger and Spahn, kind of faded and folded, and then, you know, Nick did what he had to do on 18. I think he's played in those last three events that he's won. He's played eight playoff holes. He's birdied seven of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when the chips have been down, he's been super, super good. And it's just like I was in Toronto on that Sunday. I didn't go to Winnipeg a day earlier, shockingly. So I went to watch with a couple buddies, went to watch the Stars and Sens game.
Yeah.
And then once that ended, like, there was a bunch of people there, and they turned on the golf, but I went back to the hotel. I don't know what you guys are like. Sometimes if you care about really watching something, I kind of want to watch it by myself.
Yes, 100%,
unless it's a really small group, and there's like 15 people there, and I was like,
too distracting.
I got to go watch this on my own. And so I did, and man, a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, I was looking up his career earnings. It just kind of shows you how far golf has come. Mm-hmm. He's got made over $20 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, in not a spectacular career, but like a successful one. Go back 25 years, guys like him would like be a grind to try to make ends meet every year. But
yeah,
man.
I mean, basically now, and now it's tougher because only the top 70 guys keep their cards.
Yeah.
But if you're top 70 on the PGA Tour, that's probably 1.5 in earnings for the year, or maybe a bit more. But once you get inside the top 30, where he's not, you get all the free money events, no cuts, elevated events. So it doesn't matter where you finish, you're making a check.
How many
you get in the majors?
How many strokes does he give you when you guys have played?
The last time we kind of played, first off, I'll say this. If we play on a course that's long and we play from the back tees, it doesn't matter how many shots. But we played Ledgeview, where we're both from, and he gave me 15 shots.
Yeah.
And I shot 77, and we tied. He was 62.
That is amazing.
He gave you 15 shots. You still shot a 70, and you tied. That's amazing.
And I kind of choked it on the back.
He almost had him.
I should have had him.
I don't know if you could call it you choked it when the other guy shot 62.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I kind of puked on myself coming home. I like bogeyed three of the final four and birdied 18. And
so did you have was that the best round you've had against a pro, or have you had a more success against Adam?
Only played with Adam once, I think. Nick a few times. Oh, actually played with Adam and Nick both last year at Silverleaf in Arizona with Ferraro. And we both actually played okay. But we would joke because that was shortly before they both went to the Masters and missed the cut. So we were going in that and said, we're either going to ruin these guys or we're going to harden them mentally, and we ruined them for the Masters.
So the last trip to Arizona was a pretty good one.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, that course is it's next level. They call them comfort stations, kind of like the places on the course where you go in and, you know, you get whatever you want, bartenders and all that kind of stuff. But it's that is the high rent district, that course.
Yeah. I feel like Utah's probably got some good courses. I've seen some Instagram trying to tell me to take a golf trip to Utah, and the courses look absolutely insane.
Yeah. I mean, first off, I had never been to Utah except for I've had to stay over one time because I missed a connector to Nashville, I think, in the playoffs maybe one time when I was going to cover St. Louis, Nashville. That city is awesome. It's beautiful. It's like a mini Denver with the mountains closer. I really, really liked it. I thought it was great. But, yeah, they say, like, Park City is very close by, right?
Yeah.
Cost of living is decent.
Yeah.
I had a good chat with Ian Cole there. The views and the mountains all around it, and then the lake on the one side, it's really, really nice.
Do you get a chance to play at all during the year when you stop on a road anywhere? You don't stay anywhere long enough.
And also, like, you're not going to lug your clubs.
Yeah.
First off.
You're a guy, you're not going to rent clubs.
No. Well, I did for Silverleaf. I said, okay, I'll go. I'll just, you know, bring some golf balls. But so we rented that day. But I think in the course of our careers, we've played, I'm going to say maybe four times on the road over 20-some years. That's it. I mean, you just don't do it.
Yeah. It's not long enough, and you're there to work.
Yeah, and also I'm not packing clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
Or golf shoes. Yeah. Or stuff like that to haul around.
Well, the problem is that they're not going to, cover the fee for the extra bag, right? You got to pay for it yourself.
Well, I'd figure a way to sneak it through.
Dan Murphy joining us here on Canucks Central as the Canucks get ready for the LA Kings. And, I think the basic mantra from a lot of fans is you can't get a good feel for this team. Whenever it feels like they're turning a corner and finding their game, finding their identity, they lay an egg like they did the other night in Winnipeg.
It's almost like one step forward, two steps back. I mean, I was looking today, since December 21st, since December 1st, they've played 21 games. They're 7-7-7.
Yeah.
Right? And in those 21 games, just 5 regulation wins.
Yeah.
So I always want to say this. I think you have to give them some credit for keeping their heads above water or, treading water with the amount of injuries and absences they've had with their very best players.
Yeah.
I think the game in Winnipeg was the first time this season that Demko, Hughes, Hronek, Pedersen, Miller, and Besser were all available in the same game.
Yeah.
So I will say that, but it is, somewhat frustrating that the offense is where it is. Defensively, I think they're playing a way in which they have to limit as much as possible, and that's just kind of the way they're going to play. But it feels a lot like, the way the offense was kind of at near the end of last season in the playoffs. Like, they don't generate a ton 5-on-5. Now, maybe this gets resolved if Pedersen and Miller find the level we've seen them play at in the past. Like, maybe that, because that's their top two centers. Mm-hmm. And if they are 15% better, or whatever we saw them, especially for the first, 4 or 5 months of last year, I'm sure that solves a lot.
Yeah.
But are we confident that's going to happen this season? I'm not too sure. So I still believe they can grab a wild card spot. I think Demko, and God bless Lankinen, but if Demko starts to get some form, I just think that they are... I believe that they're better than Calgary or St. Louis or Utah.
Yeah.
I just kind of think they are. But, the proof has to be in the pudding because over the last, 5-6 weeks, it's been pretty average.
Well, I think a lot of it does come down to their star players ultimately, right? We talked about this before, but Pedersen and JT, they're shooting the puck far less than they have in the past. And this team in general is shooting the puck far less. But if you look at every metric and statistic offensively that the Canucks are struggling as team, individually, that's where Pedersen and Miller are also struggling. So maybe it is simplistic, but ultimately, if those guys get going, I think it changes everything.
Yeah, I think they're last in the league in expected goals at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Last.
Yeah.
32.
Yeah.
No, I think they're third in the league in expected goals against per 60 at 5-on-5. So defensively, they've been right near the top, but offensively, they've been at the very bottom. Now, last year, even though they weren't at the top in expected goals, they finished at such a high rate with their shooting percentage in most situations that it masked it a bit, but this year that hasn't happened.
Yeah, and even still, I think they were kind of more middle of the pack in expected goals for last year. And, if you're defending as well as this team can defend, then you don't have to be first in the league in generating offense, but you still have to do it at a pretty good clip. And I know you had the tweet that got quite a bit of play about Quinn Hughes, and I think all 32 of those expected goals have been with Quinn Hughes on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know what you can say. He's been, so good, better than last year. Everybody in their markets gets their backs up about the Hart and the Norris and all that. And, listen, Cale Makar wins the Norris because he has 95 points. If Werenski somehow scores 30 goals, okay. But I just think in terms of the overall impact, with or without the player, it's the old who's the most important to their team. And I don't think you can say there's any player this season so far that might, he might get some help, but there's no player in the league that's more important to his team's success this season than Quinn Hughes. I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, and I think, Elliot mentioned on 32 Thoughts, and he's talked about how everybody is so impressed by the way Quinn has handled the adversity behind the scenes with his teammates, and you're around him as well. But considering all the struggles the team has had and all the things that I kind of popped up, his demeanor has been even throughout all of it. And you've seen captains and leaders here throughout the years. It seems like he does have the steel to lead a team through situations like this in a Canadian market.
I would totally agree with that. You know, and let's not forget he's dealing with his own struggles right now in terms of what he's dealt with injuries and whatever he's going through with his hand. So I think he's just been remarkable for this team on the ice and off the ice, and I just hope that a season of prime Quinn Hughes doesn't go by the wayside because some of his, you know, talented teammates just can't quite raise their level a little bit more.
Irv, appreciate the time as always. Maybe Nick Taylor will give you 20 shots next time.
I wouldn't accept that. It depends which course.
Okay. Thanks, Murph.
All right, thanks, guys.
There he is, Dan Murphy, at Sportsnet Murph on Twitter, as you know. Canucks ringside reporter joining us here at the Mobile Kintech Studio in Rogers Arena. Canucks and LA Kings coming up tonight. You know, I joke about Murph needing 20 shots from Nick. I might need 20 shots if I play Murph.
Yes.
So.
I mean, I wouldn't need. I'll need 20 shots against you. So, like, yeah, I wouldn't even embarrass myself to play with Murph. Like, yeah. I chatted with Murph in the past. He's like, we're gonna go golfing. You want to come? I'm like, I'm not good enough to come and hang out. Like, it just, you don't want to be the guy who's so much worse than everybody else too. Yeah. Like, then it makes your game worse. You get self conscious. You lose confidence. You see these guys just go out there and rip it, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
great. I'm going hack it 5 times before I get it off.
Chopping wood out here. These guys are like ripping it 260 yards every time out with the driver. Getting some questions in on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox because you could hear a happy birthday playing in the background while we were chatting with Murph. And we did get a question from Adam from Poco. Whose birthday is it?
I don't know.
It's Jim Robson's 90th birthday. Hall of Famer, legendary Canucks broadcaster Jim Robson. So imagine there is a setup for some celebrations here tonight in honor of the great Jim Robson. Why not? He's one of the best to ever do it.
I was so riveted by Murph's golf stories that I was not paying attention at all to what was happening in the background.
Yeah. I mean, pretty incredible that Nick Taylor gave him 15 shots and still couldn't beat him. I mean, he shot 62. It's absolutely crazy.
It is nuts.
That is what happened on the day.
We do have some reaction here. Like V says in the text inbox, talk about lowered expectations from contender to hoping they're better than Calgary, St. Louis, and Utah. Well, I think the conversation right now is about make the playoffs, right? Like, it's one thing to talk about being a contender, but when you're sitting outside the playoff picture, all you can really focus on is getting past the teams that you're fighting with for the time being.
Yeah.
Get into a playoff spot, and then we can have a conversation about being a contender again, right? Like,
yep.
You know, like it's baby steps at this stage. You have fewer than 40 games to go on the campaign. You're outside the playoffs looking in, and they're kind of in the spot where they got to go on a bit of a sprint now, right? Like, that's kind of what they need to do.
I had my my blood boiling about it yesterday. I had some chamomile tea last night, a little bit of chamomilla, and I calmed down a little bit.
You did?
So if you want to hear me rant about how I'm out on the Canucks finding their game this year, then you can go back and listen to yesterday's show on the podcast. Because, I mean, every time they've shown a glimpse of what they were last year, what they could be as a team, what the talent on their team should show on the ice, they followed it up with absolute stinkers.
Yeah.
I mean, we went through it. It's happened on numerous occasions. The last time they played LA was the culmination of a 3-game win streak through California. Then they come back home and they get their you-know-whats handed to them by the New York Islanders. Of all teams, they beat the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers 4-0. Follow that up with a absolute bludgeoning at the hands of the Boston Bruins on home ice. A game that finished 5-1 that very well could have been 8 or 9-1 for the Boston Bruins.
It could have been worse. I mean, and
so every time they've had a good performance, they've followed it up with an absolute stinker.
They haven't shown anything to suggest they're a contender this year. The only thing they've shown is that they do have some defensive chops. And if you go through the numbers too, like they are like it's they're at the bottom of the league in in offensive metrics, near the top of the league in defensive metrics. So there are certain qualities they have, right? That are good, but they haven't shown anything outside of those defensive qualities, which have also been somewhat inconsistent through the year, that they are anything more than a bubble team. That doesn't mean that can change. And like I was saying yesterday, if you look at how their team has performed, if you look at their star players, and if you go by the logical step and also historically and based on regression, there is likely a winning streak coming. There is likely a hot streak coming from some of their top players, including JT and more so even Elias Pettersson. But just because that's likely doesn't mean it's going to happen. And there are years where things just never get on track. So you can't just sit there and say, well, it's going to happen. And the longer it takes this team to turn it around, well, the less runway you have to make that happen, right? So I'm very much on the side of there's still time. We can see things come together. But it kind of has to happen quick here because I can't keep saying this any longer. Like, you go another couple of weeks and this continues, like, you're kind of done.
Yeah.
You know, like, you put yourself in a position where you have to chase the standings, and when you're in that spot, it becomes very difficult.
You don't want to be in this spot where you're on the outside of the playoffs looking in at this stage of the season, but that's where the Canucks find themselves right now. Tonight is an interesting one. So it's the first matchup with the LA Kings since the Tanner Jeannot hit on Brock Besser. And Besser missed six games. They didn't officially call it a concussion, but you look at the hit and you look at how it played out. It was a head injury for Brock Besser.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dirty hit and deserved a suspension.
And it got a suspension.
Yeah.
3-game suspension for Tanner Jeannot. He was also kicked out of the game as the hit happened. So there was no chance of retribution on Jeannot in the moment necessarily because it happened behind the play. The whistle blew down. Nobody really saw what happened, and then Jeannot was taken off the ice.
Yeah, I mean, the people who saw it, I mean, Hronek realized something happened, didn't see what happened, did kind of react to him. Hughes also reacted a little bit, but there wasn't much because, I mean, you heard the guy say they didn't know what exactly happened because they didn't all catch it. However, after the game, they were frustrated. There were some suggestions that these things get taken care of, and how much of that will get taken care of here tonight on the ice? You know, and I know fans want the retribution, and we can talk about whether the retribution works or not, but do you think it's more likely somebody fights Jeannot, or it's more likely it doesn't happen? Because I'd say it's more likely we see a fight with somebody taking Jeannot on as opposed to it not happening.
So it might be a situation where it's pretty simple. And Jeannot, coming into the game, knows that he's going to have to answer to somebody. And the first person that challenges him is going to get him to drop the mitts, and it'll get settled that way right away. My money's on Vincent Desharnais being that guy. He mentioned it in the post game when after that previous game with the LA Kings, he's slated to be in the lineup tonight. Desharnais is. So I imagine that's as simple as it goes. What I don't want to see, and I know the Flames ended up winning this game, but you remember the first game of the year when Miller had, I don't think it was even, it wasn't really a questionable hit, but he hit a Calgary Flames player hard.
Yeah, and they went into the boards and they got injured, they got to get stretchered off.
Yeah. And, you know, then it was Mantha chasing after Miller and a bunch of Calgary guys chasing after Miller. They took a couple of penalties. Canucks built their lead early in that game because Calgary was, you know, chasing Miller around, essentially. Eventually, Miller fought. But the point of it is, like, the Canucks aren't in a position where they can do that. You know, they can't put themselves behind the eight ball. I think that's kind of the opposite of retribution. That's just kind of being stupid about it. You know, you can't put yourself, you're already in a bad spot standings-wise. You need all the points you can get right now. You can't find yourself early in the first period, given the LA Kings an early power play, they score on it. Like, that's a problem for the Canucks.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen. Like, I think the way this gets handled, so to speak, is somebody goes to Jeannot.
Yeah.
And they go off a face after a face.
Jeannot should know that he has to fight somebody.
I would imagine he will. Remember when Alex Edler hit which Leaf did he hit again?
When he had to fight Wayne Simmons.
Yeah, who did he hit again? Which Leaf did he hit?
I think it was Tavares.
Was it Tavares he hit?
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a knee on knee. Ends up getting suspended for it as well. Had to fight. And then the next time the Canucks played, they had to fight. They played the Leafs, and Simmons challenged him. And
yeah.
you know, we got into it with a lot of Leafs fans over that too, and Grandma Dubas as well, who was
including Kyle Dubas's grandma.
I remember that. That was really funny. But we can go down memory road on a different.
She going
day.
After Frank Saravalli for that takedown piece? Well, okay, maybe that's a different.
But Alex Edler, yeah, right. Alex Edler knew that he would have to face the music, and he did.
Yeah.
Jeannot understands he does have to face the music. Now, if he ducks the Canucks all game and doesn't, maybe you get to a point where they chase him around, so to speak. I'm not expecting that. I just think what's going to happen is at some point off a face-off, he'll just go with somebody. Or during the play, they'll just get challenged and go. Like, I don't think it's going to be one of those where they're chasing him, trying to get him to drop the gloves all night.
Ultimately, like, the idea that the thing I don't agree with is that Desharnais challenging Jeannot somehow acts as a deterrent for any dirty hit happening in the future. Like, it doesn't. I mean, the history of the NHL shows us that it doesn't. The biggest deterrent that happened in the moment was that he was given a 3-game suspension and in turn forfeits over $40,000 while being out of the lineup for 3 games. That's a bigger deterrent than any Canuck challenging Tanner Jeannot tonight. Because you know what I know? There's going to be dirty hits thrown in the National Hockey League again, even if a guy has to answer for his dirty hit by dropping the mitts with somebody.
You can't stop the opposition from targeting your best players. I know everybody, or not everyone, but most fans wanted Zadorov back. And he was a deterrent in the playoffs, right? And he was an absolute force, a physical force. Did that stop either the Preds or the Oilers from targeting Quinn Hughes every chance they got?
Didn't stop Kiefer Sherwood hunting down Quinn Hughes for every possible hit that he could.
That's a reality. You're going to have to, your star players, especially come postseason, they're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
I do think, though, having players who stick up for each other creates better team camaraderie. I think it brings more togetherness, and I think there is power in guys sticking up for each other. And when you have that organically happening with the team and they're fighting for one another, I think that has a certain power, and it brings a togetherness to a group that I think matters. So I think I want to see a team rally around bad moments, like I do, but yeah, I think the notion that you can have somebody on your roster that's going to prevent guys from getting targeted from time to time, that's fantasy. That's not fact.
Lotso, hope they're more interested in fighting for a playoff spot than fighting Jeannot. Another text comes in terms of Jeannot, I'd rather every single guy finish their check on him and win the game. Mike, the urologist from Brockville, you can't chase retribution when the opportunity presents itself. Take it and move on. Others thinking maybe Vincent Desharnais isn't the best option to go after Jeannot.
Well, I don't think anybody's a good option.
He's 6'7". I mean, he's got to be able to do something.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's a good option. I honestly think Noah Juulsen's probably the guy who can fare the best, and he may not play because he's a game-time decision. Doesn't look like he's going to go. And the other one's probably JT. Right, but you probably don't want JT to be the guy who's gonna, you know,
you're gonna
fight
need
that.
JT on the assuming he's playing well, or you're gonna need JT on the ice.
Yes, I mean he hasn't been playing well, but also you don't want JT to be in a position where, like, does it break a hand in a fight?
Yeah,
in this, like, if something happens in a game and they fight because heat of the moment and that's how the game went, sure. But do you want JT to be the guy who's gonna hunt down Jeannot and fight this fight and potentially get hurt? Probably not.
Trade for Matthew Olivier. That could be the other option. Although I think a lot of teams are saying that.
And I think Columbus kind of wants to keep him.
Yeah, I think so too, with the way that the Columbus Blue Jackets and Matthew Olivier is playing this year. All right, coming up, we're going to hear a little bit of what was said earlier today, the JT Miller media availability that has been so talked about throughout Canuck circles this afternoon. You'll hear that in a little bit as well as we get into the pre-game show ahead of the Canucks and Kings. HGTV has a new address. All the latest HGTV shows are now available on channel 409 on Rogers Xfinity TV. You are listening to Canuck Central.